So the translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Translation. In the millennium of the Rishis, the personality of Godhead accepted the third empowered incarnation in the form of Deva Rishi Narada, who is a great sage among the demigods. He collected expositions of the Vedas which deal with devotional service and which inspire non-fruitive action. So the purport. The great Rishi Narada, who is an empowered incarnation of the personality of Godhead, propagates devotional service all over the universe. All great devotees of the Lord all over the universe and in different planets and species of lives are His disciples. Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is also one of His disciples. Narada is the author of the Narada Pancharatra, which is the exposition of the Vedas, particularly for the devotional service of the Lord. This Narada Pancharatra trains the karmis, or the fruitive workers, to achieve liberation from the bondage of fruitive work. The conditioned souls are mostly attracted by fruitive work because they want to enjoy life by the sweat of their own brows. The whole universe is full of fruitive workers in all species of life. The fruitive works include all kinds of economic development plans. But the law of nature provides that every action has its resultant reaction, and the performer of the work is bound up by such reactions, good or bad. The reaction of good work is comparative material prosperity, whereas the reaction of bad work is comparative material distress. But material conditions, either in so-called happiness or in so-called distress, are all meant ultimately for distress only. Foolish materialists have no information how to obtain eternal happiness in the unconditional state. Sri Narada informs these foolish fruitive workers how to realize the reality of happiness. He gives direction to the diseased men of the world how one's present engagement can lead one to the path of spiritual emancipation. The physician directs the patient to take treated milk in the form of curd for his suffering from indigestion due to his taking another milk preparation. So the cause of the disease and the remedy of the disease may be the same, but it must be treated by an expert physician like Narada. The Bhagavad Gita also gives the same solution of serving the Lord by the fruits of one's labor. That will lead one to the path of Naishkamya, or liberation. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Satarine Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna, Jaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Arvaita Gadada, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Gum Guru Tiva Charam Pangam Langayate Grim Yat Kripata Maham Vande Shri Gurun Dinatarinam. So I was just thinking, I was remembering this morning that about a year and a half ago, I met one of my friends. I was on the way to the Goshala, and he was a high school friend of mine. We haven't seen each other in about 5 years. And then he just saw me in the saffron garms. And he was like, this is a bit of a shock, you know? So then he said, what are you doing here? and I shaved up. So I told him, you know, I've joined the temple, trying to nourish myself with spiritual knowledge and share this to others. And then I was reflecting in my life this morning, there's many instances where I've turned up at the wrong place. In one interview, I went into the wrong office. And there was a bunch of CEOs having a meeting there. And they're like, what are you doing here? And then just now, I was thinking to myself, I'm sitting on here and I'm thinking, what am I doing here now as well? So somehow, Nishkanchina Prabhu has placed me here to speak on this this wonderful verse. So I really ask for the blessings and very much the empowerment of the devotees to say something of use, something of benefit. Everyone, all these devotees are the life force, I think, of my life. They're the ones that inspire me, that keep me going. So please give me some empowerment and some blessings to say something of use here. It's a beautiful verse, actually, about Narada Muni. This is, I think, the first time in the whole of the Bhagavatam that Narada Muni is spoken about. And then we see later on in the whole of the Bhagavatam, each canto he comes in, isn't it? If you see in like any major scriptures, Narada Muni somehow sneaks in. In the Ramayana, in the Mahabharata, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is all about his journey. So we see that Narada Muni is one of the greatest preachers in our lineage, an expert preacher, and it's exciting to hear about his pastimes, isn't it? Like how he deals with certain personalities, how he preaches, how he's so dynamic. Even sometimes I just think, well, I wonder where he is right now. Who's he preaching to? What's he doing right now? Like how dynamic he is. So a wonderful, it's been wonderful meditating on this verse and finding different pastimes of Narada Muni. There was once Hanuman when he was actually very young. So he was with his mother, Kateri, in their home. And suddenly as they were just speaking to one another, they started hearing a very divine music coming. And then Hanuman was thinking, who is this? Where's this music coming from? It's beautiful. So Kateri straight away said, this must be the sound of the divine Veena of Narada Muni. So now Hanuman was very young. He didn't know who Narada Muni was, so he asked his mother, who is this person? So Kateri explained to him, actually, I don't need to give any introduction to him. You just jump up, go and find him, and see him for yourself. So then Hanuman thought, okay. So he jumped into the sky. He went and he obstructed Narada Muni. It was explained that he was on his way to meet some rishis. And he obstructed him. And he said to him, I will not let you pass unless you give me blessings. And you know, Hanuman's quite stubborn and he doesn't want someone to pass. So Narada Muni, instantly, he didn't even hesitate. He said, fine, what blessings do you want? And Hanuman said, actually, I've got so many blessings from the demigods. I don't know what blessing I need. What do you want to give to me? And you know, he had strength, he had the ability to get bigger, smaller, whatever he wanted. He had so many divine blessings. So then Narada thought for a moment and he said, one thing that you don't have that I can give you is to become the most expert musician. So he gave this blessing and Hanuman was very pleased. And then he said to Narada Muni, but how will you actually know that I'm the most expert musician? He said, you've given the blessing, but how will you actually know? Can I sing for you? So Narada said, okay, fine. You can sing one song for me, and I'll see if you're the most expert. So they went down. They sat in one place in their kingdom, and Narada Muni put his veena down on a rock by the side. So Hanuman, expertly, he started singing. Narada, with his eyes closed, was just shaking his head in complete ecstasy. And Hanuman sang this certain raga which he knew would make the environment change. So when he sang this particular raga, it would make the rocks there melt out of ecstasy. So Narada's, his veena was on a rock. So the rock melted and the veena went inside of it. So now in his ecstasy, he realized, okay, my service has to continue. He's expert, he's the best musician. So he said, Hanuman, you can stop now. So Hanuman said, please open your eyes and then say that. So he opened his eyes, he looked around, but he was completely absorbed, so he didn't actually see his veena. So he said, fine, stop. So Hanuman said, fine, I'll stop. And then he stood up, he said, Narada Muni said to him, yes, you are the most expert. You are the best musician. So Hanuman said, okay, thank you. And then he started walking off. So Narada Muni thought, okay, let me go back and meet these rishis. So he tried to take his veena out and it was stuck. So then he thought, Hanuman, you've done a trick. What have you done? He said, nothing. You just told me to sing, so I've sung. Now you told me to stop, so I've stopped. He goes, no, you've done some sort of mystics. What have you done? And Hanuman said, no, I've been good for a whole week. So Narada says, just being good for a week means the week before you must have done so many bad things. He goes, you're doing troublesome stuff right now. So Hanuman said, Narada Muni said to him, please start singing again, please. And then Hanuman just ran off. So then Narada Muni thought, okay, I have to run after him. So he started running after him. And then, you know, Hanuman's in the body of a monkey, so they can run very fast. So he was running around his house. Narada Muni's running after him. And he's just shouting, Hanuman, I have to go for service. Please let me go. And then Khetri came, Hanuman's mother. She saw Narada Muni in her house. She was very pleased. She touched his feet, took the blessings and said, what is Hanuman doing? Is he up to mischief again? And then Narada Muni said, no, but you know, he's my veena. I need my veena. And he's got it stuck in this rock. So then Hanuman eventually came. He sang the raga, let the veena out. And then he just explained to Khetri and Narada Muni that actually you came down and you sat in one place in this kingdom. He said, but in my heart that wasn't enough. He said, therefore I purposely planned that the veena would get stuck and that you would have to run all over the kingdom and your lotus feet would purify the whole kingdom, our whole house, because you are a saint, you have Krishna in your heart. And therefore, your lotus feet can turn this whole place into a place of pilgrimage. So it's a nice, very beautiful story. And we see the nature, actually, of these personalities very deeply. That Hanuman himself, he's very eager and he understands the benefit of this sadhu sangha. He understands the great benefit that can come. And the other side is also we see the simplicity of a Vaishnava in Narada Muni's actions. That as soon as he comes in contact with Hanuman, as soon as Hanuman says, give me blessings, and he's thinking, I will make you even a better singer than me. So there's no envy involved. There's completely no envy in his character. He's thinking, I will make you a better singer than me, and he gives him that blessing, not holding back anything. He wants to fulfill his desires even beyond his own ability. And he gives his complete blessings. Once, and I was thinking in my life, like, if someone asks you for blessings, usually, you'll be like, okay, I wish well for you to a certain extent, isn't it? But as soon as you get to my level, stay there, you know? Don't go beyond that. And you see that in the world, actually, in so many places, isn't it? That people want you to be a little bit less than them, a little bit lower than them, not to exceed them. It's a bit of a scary feeling to exceed someone above you. So once Srila Prabhupada, he was in a conference of scientists, and one of his disciples, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, he was giving the lecture to all these, you know, people in physics, in mathematics, etc. And so at the end of the lecture, it was very technical, and the whole crowd kind of started clapping. Some of them stood up, and so Prabhupada turned to his disciples behind him and said, wasn't that amazing? And they were just enthused seeing that Prabhupada was, you know, amazed. And they said, yeah, that was amazing. So Prabhupada said, at that point he said, So what was the amazing part of it? What did you like about the lecture? So all these disciples said, we didn't actually understand any of it. And then Prabhupada said, this is good. He said, so many scientists are out there and they're saying so many things that no one understands. So if we say something that no one understands, then they'll think also these people have something great to give. But we see in this world, the whole world, completely enamored by so many illusions, by so many lackings, by a lot of spiritual ignorance, isn't it? And amidst this whole atmosphere, we see that Narada Muni, in his various ways, he is penetrating through and he's trying to give pure bhakti in so many different ways. And so many personalities in the whole lineage are just penetrating through again and again and again. But I was thinking specifically in Narada Muni's life and his pastimes, you can see that there's so many of our scriptures that are directly there because of him. We see that he is the one that inspired Valmiki, that got him to chant Mara Mara Mara, which changed into Ram Ram Ram. And then eventually he came and he compiled the whole of the Ramayana, one of the great itihasas that we have in our lineage. We see also even the Srimad Bhagavatam that we're reading. So there's this huge conversation that comes about in a few of the chapters. I think after this chapter, it begins where it talks about Narada Muni's previous lives and how he actually instructed and had this conversation with Vyasadeva. And in the fifth chapter, it has a real turning point where Narada Muni says to his disciple, he says this verse, Bhavatat anudita prayam yaso bhagavato malam yene vaso na tusyeta manyeta darshanam kilam. So when he's saying this verse, it's explained that these two verses, anudita prayam, actually they mean you have not yet described sufficiently the spotless glories of the Lord. So very much in this verse he's about to start cutting Vyasadeva. And then later on, at the last verse, the last line of the verse, he says, Manyate tad darshanam kilam. So it's interesting when Prabhupada actually, when he translates this word darshanam, he translates it. Usually you think darshan, you see the Lord or something, isn't it? But actually he takes this verse and he translates it as philosophy. So a key way that someone actually sees the Lord through the philosophy that is spoken by sadhus through their ear, this is actually the way that we come in contact with the Lord, it's explained. So throughout this conversation then, Narada starts telling Vyasadeva that actually you are unsatisfied by producing this literature. So what do you think the previous literatures, all the Vedanta Sutras, so then he's saying, what do you think people that come in contact with this will feel? If you're unsatisfied and you're the author, how are they going to be satisfied? So then, in a nice way, he starts cutting him and encouraging him that now you must actually compile the Srimad Bhagavatam, the spotless Amala Puran. And so, here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining, and in the verse, he's explaining that actually Narada, he has compiled his own book. He's the author of the Narada Pancharatra. And we see that within his life, he's given so many examples of how one should live. But in this particular scripture, Srila Prabhupada explains in one lecture that actually we wouldn't be able to even have brahmanas in society without this scripture. Without this Pancharatrika system, he said, there would be no brahmanas in society. This is the system that established it. Does anyone know actually what Narada means, by any chance? What his name means? One who gives Narayan, yeah. Yeah, so one who actually delivers Narayan to others. And we see in his life that he's preaching to people of so many different calibers. Like you see, when you see like a big company or university, Harvard, for example, you see they're taking in the top elite and then they're making them even more top elite. So they've taken in a certain people and then made them stay at that level or brought them up a little bit. But we see in Narada Muni, in his lifetime, he's getting people from so many different angles. He's getting people in different modes, different mentalities, different intentions, and he's bringing them up to the platform of pure devotional service. Even so much that he preaches to a baby in the womb, Prahlad Maharaj. And when Prahlad comes out, he knows, obviously he was a saint from before, but he remembers all this Bhagavad Gita that is spoken to him within the womb. So he said that within this Narada Pancharatra, there's actually five limbs. Has anyone's read it before? Narada Pancharatra, Govindapur, looked into it. So he said there's five limbs of the Narada Pancharatra. So the first ratra, the first aspect, is actually speaking about knowledge of the absolute truth. And he said that this ratra is in the mode of goodness. So those in the mode of goodness can benefit greatly from it, and how to understand the absolute from their platform in the mode of goodness. Then they said that the second limb is knowledge about liberation. And he said that this is also in the mode of goodness for people in that mode, and guiding them towards spiritual liberation. And he said the third limb, is knowledge of devotional service. And he said this is the aspect of this whole Pancharatra that is talking about transcendental knowledge specifically about bhakti yoga. The fourth limb talks about mystic yoga, which is said to be, this is what it says at the start of the whole Narada Pancharatra, that it says that this one is in the mode of passion, for those in that mode. And the last is knowledge about the mode of ignorance. And obviously this is in the mode of ignorance, like this. So we see that his preaching, he's given advice on so many different levels to cover them. But specifically, the whole of that book, he's compiled it so that on any level, that person will get knowledge of how to come up, how to bring themselves up to the mode of gradually Shuddha Sattva, to transcendental mode. So we see in Narada's, in his life, he's accommodating for so many different levels of people. And also in Prabhupada's life, we see that very much, that he was always very considerate of the person. We see that instance that on one hand, he's talking to that Formula One driver, and for 4 hours, can you imagine, for 4 hours you're talking about cars. I think after like 10 minutes I'll just be like falling asleep, I don't know. But for 4 hours he's engaging with him, and the devotees are even thinking like, what's going on? You know, this is our spiritual master. Should we be wasting his time? He's speaking like this. And then as soon as the opportunity comes, he says to the individual, says to him that actually, you know, these cars are going at such a high speed. And then Prabhupada says, oh, so at such a high speed, is there death? And he says, yes, definitely there's death. And then straight away he says to him, so what do you know about death? And then he's found his way in. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gaurinitaya ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So we see Srila Prabhupada, he found his way in, and then he just went for it. Then for the next hour, he was just preaching the Krishna conscious philosophy to him. And because this gentleman had thought, okay, he's listened to me for so long, now I must listen to him. So he carried on the discussion. And then we see the other kind of hand, where the devotees were bringing one individual. They introduced him, saying, this is Henry Ford's grandson. Was it grandson? Great-grandson. Grandson, right? Great-grandson. Okay. And then in the first meeting that they have, Prabhupada says in one line, so where's your great-grandfather now? And it just hits that point. Quite a strong point to hit. And then he gives him the philosophy. So in one instance, he just goes for it. So we see that in both, in some of the expert preachers in this whole lineage, we see this this consideration of kala, desha, and patra, the time, place, and circumstance. So they're expert in preaching because they know exactly what to hit at what times. They're so absorbed and they know exactly what level others are at. When I was thinking of sometimes, like, when you're doing services, you can get very used to, like, you know, you do it in a certain way, you deliver it to a crowd in a certain way, that's your style, and it's sometimes it's difficult to always adjust to them, isn't it? I relate on my level, I think. So I was thinking, what are some of the services that I'm put through and where I have to really kind of be on edge, really actually think about the person and change to their dynamics? I was thinking one of them is very much the book marathon, actually. Like, you don't know who you're going to stop, you don't know what they're going to say to you, you don't know what day they're going through, what's going on in their life. And somehow you have this task of actually convincing them about spiritual life, convincing them to take a book, and also donate to this mission. So it's like, you have to really be on edge with this service. And whilst I was actually on the marathon, so there was, every year I tried to take one key meditation away. One thing that I'll either hear or read every single day and really try and dive a bit deeper into. And so this year I had one lecture that I was listening to in about five-minute clip, which really awoke me to the nature of this material world, really showed the nature of it. And it's an incident towards the end of the Mahabharata, after the whole war, the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and it's where Yudhishthira Maharaj is now crowned as the king, and he's in his throne. And so what happens at one point, this gentleman, he's walking through Hastinapur, and he comes towards the palace of Yudhishthira Maharaj, and when he's there, then he's going straight towards his quarters, and Bhima is in front of them, in front of his door. So this gentleman says to Bhima, "I need to see Yudhishthira right now." And Bhima says, "No, you know, he's actually resting." I don't know if he said resting, that's what ISKCON people say, but he's sleeping, whatever he's doing. "I don't think you need to disturb him. Let me know what you need." And he said, "I have questions that need to be answered right now." And so Bhima, again, he's saying, no, you can ask me those questions. You don't need to bother him. Bhim. Yeah, Yudhishthira is in his quarters sleeping. So Bhima says, no, you can ask me these questions. And, you know, out of the five of the Pandavas, he's not known as the most philosophical kind of character, personality. So then this gentleman says, "Fine, I will explain to you, but these are not hypothetical situations. I'm not trying to test your IQ. These are real observations that I saw on my way to this to your palace." He said, "The first thing I saw as I was walking, I saw a fence around a crop of field where a farm was. And I said, as I was walking closer and closer, that fence started walking, it started moving inwards and was eating away the crops. So I've never seen such a thing in my whole life, that a fence is eating the crops. What does this mean?" So Bhima is a bit baffled now. He says, "Okay, I'm not sure about this one, but maybe the next one I'll know." So he said, "Fine, okay. As I was walking, I saw a man. He had a huge pot of water. The pot of water was full to the rim, and he poured it into 8 jugs. And as he poured it into the 8 jugs, then he poured those 8 jugs back, and not one little drop was actually, you know, spilt or missed. A full jug put into the 8 pots, and then the 8 jugs were put back into that one pot, and the amount was halved, but no water went anywhere else." He said, "What does this mean?" So Bhima was sweating by now. He said, "Okay, 2 out of 2, I haven't got, maybe third time lucky." So I said, "Fine." So he said, "The third thing I saw as I was walking, a gentleman on the side of the road, and he was he was putting the elephant through the eye of a needle." He said, the crazy thing is, the elephant fit through, but his tail got stuck. How does that even make sense? An elephant, but the tail got stuck." He says, "What does this mean?" He said, I don't know. So the last observation I saw was that actually there was a huge boulder in the middle of the street, and it was disturbing people. It was coming in the way of people, and so many people were trying to move this boulder out of the way, but actually no one could move it. I saw some of the strongest wrestlers, elephants, people using mantras and all these vast technologies trying to move this, but no one could move it. And then suddenly I saw a monk come. And this monk was walking, he had saffron cloth from his waist down, and he had like a chadar on him. He said this was a beautiful person. He had lotus-like eyes, very long arms reaching to his knees. Completely, everyone was enamored by his beauty. And he said, as soon as I saw this person, I thought, what on earth can a monk do compared to all these like strong personalities here that are trying? This monk came from his chadar. He took one little strand of the wool, and he just waved it towards this boulder, and this humongous boulder started flying millions of miles away and just disappeared in thin air. Said, what do you even make sense of all of this? So Bhima said, okay, you can go and see Yudhishthira Maharaj now. You've got a purpose to see him. So then this gentleman went in, and then he came back out. The gentleman was fine. All his queries were answered. As he was walking off, then Bhima stopped him saying, you know, your mind might be satisfied, but now you've agitated my mind. I don't know what to think now. I'm curious about these observations. So he said, what did Yudhishthira say to you? He said, as soon as I told him these four observations, Yudhishthira Maharaj told me that actually these are all signs of an age of degradation. Signs of an age of darkness. He said the first one, the fence that was moving in and eating away the crops, this is showing the state of society that's coming. Where a fence is usually meant to actually protect, isn't it? It's meant to protect the crops. It's meant to distinguish the field. But it's moving inwards and eating away the fruits of what the field is meant to give, these crops. He says, similarly, the leaders of society who are meant to give protection, who are meant to be there for others, who are meant to keep the Dharma in place, actually they will be exploiting the persons under them, and they will be eating away and taking their fruits, taking away their crops. So he said, okay. He said, what about the second one, the pot? So he said, this pot represents the parental love towards their children, that actually a parent is ready to invest all their resources into their children. In those days, they would have, you know, a parents would have 8 children. Now it's a lot less. but they would invest all their resources so that the child would have the best education, the best upbringing, the best possibility to actually contribute to society and be in their position. He said, but when it comes to the child giving back to the parent and realizing what the parent has done, the child will give very miser amounts. And even that will be a difficulty for the child. So when I was on the Prabhupada marathon, there was one incident actually. I met one individual who just came out of prison. And he had been in prison, I think, 6 months or so. He just did a small time kind of crime where he took someone's bank card. He hadn't even used it actually, but just for taking their bank card, he was put in prison for a year, but they shortened it to 6 months. So he was telling me that actually, whilst he was in prison, his father actually committed suicide whilst he was in prison. And he wasn't even able to actually go to the funeral because the prison warden said, we don't actually have enough staff so that you can go to this place. They needed to send someone with him. And they said, we don't even have enough staff, so you're going to have to miss it. So this is the environment, the energy of the environment around us, actually. That even if the child wants to do something small for the parent, give something small back, connect to the parent, even a small bit, that the environment is just surcharged with difficulty, with this nature of superficial nature. It always brings troubles to one in these relationships. So he went up on to the third one, and Yudhisthira Maharaj, he explained that actually people in society who are like elephants, the big people with power, they will be able to easily bypass the laws, and those who are small won't be able to bypass anything. They will be caught out immediately and persecuted. And he also added that people in this day and age will spend elephantine amounts on themselves, but when it comes to giving to a good cause, it will be very difficult, extremely difficult. So on that same day when I met this prisoner, about a few hours later, this was in Liverpool, so I met another individual, and you know, like when someone's walking with these kind of small bags, like I forgot the name, Pandora or something, these like jewelry box bags and stuff. So he had two like really small bags like this. So I thought, okay, this is a serious guy, you know. When someone has like 10 Primark bags, you may be like, nah, they're trying to look for a bargain. So this guy, he looked quite serious. I thought, okay, he might be interested, he might be generous. Started speaking to him. And then somehow in the discussion, it just kind of like came out of me like a burp. Don't ask this like when you're with people. But for some reason, it just came into my head and I just said it. Like, I just said to him, so how much have you spent today? Don't say this to people, it's a bit weird. So he said to me, he was honest. He said, I spent £4,500 today. So he bought like some jewelry for his fiance and a little, some cufflinks or something for himself. £4,500. I'm trying to give him like a £3, £4 book. And then this guy said to me, you know, I think I've reached my limit for the day. So I was like, oh my God. After all of that, you can't spare £3 or £4 like that. And then the worst thing is what he said next actually to me. So I said, what are you going to do now? He said to me, I don't know, maybe I'll just keep chopping. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, seriously. So anyway, this is the nature of the world, that there's lots of Lakshmi everywhere, and it's somewhat our duty to now actually bring it back in this impossible task that's there. So then anyway, they went on to the third observation that was seen, and Yudhisthira Maharaj explained that actually amongst all this exploitation, amongst all these miserliness, amongst all these great difficulties, this is the ray of hope for humanity. This is the ray of hope, and that personality is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That amongst dark times, he's the one who will give that hand of empowerment to others. Amongst the dark times, he's that ray of hope who will take away through that simple process, that little string that he flung towards that boulder was actually the simple process of bhakti yoga, and that boulder represented spiritual ignorance, which is in the middle of society and, you know, obscuring so many people's lives. And so when I was reading this verse, I was thinking, how great this whole lineage is in our life, in our that we're connected to. That we have Narada Muni, and it's explained here, he's going from planet to planet, universe to universe. He's preaching to different species of life, even. We have Lord Chaitanya, who has come down to this one planet whilst we're here, just 500 years ago, and he's exclaimed in the scriptures as the Prema Pashottam, with the one who instills and gives prema freely to anyone and everyone. And then, to just top the whole icing of the cake, we have just 50 years ago, Srila Prabhupada, who came. Narada's given the bhakti all over universes. Lord Chaitanya is given prem here. And then Prabhupada comes and explodes it all over this world. Completely explodes it all over this world. Anyone and everyone can come in contact with this and make the most of it. And so it's interesting, actually, just one last pastime, is that when Narada actually curses those two demigods, Manigriva and Nalakuvera, it said that when Krishna is left there with the mortar behind him by Mother Yashoda, he's actually thinking, ordinarily I would have nothing to do with these two trees, but just because Narada has promised them, I must deliver them. So in the scriptures it's described that they're at best, they're actually Shiva worshippers. They've done some slight worship to Lord Shiva. But actually, beyond that, they have no, like you could say, or they have a lack of spiritual qualification. But Krishna, because of Narada Muni's curse or blessing, you could say, he has to fulfill it. So he's explained that even in this verse, you can see that it's talking about people that are continuously going in the cycle of fruitive activities, always wanting something, always wanting more, greed. And so the mind is very much agitated. But it explains, Shiva Maharaj explains that just as Narada has given this benediction to those two trees, so similarly, Srila Prabhupada has also given the same benediction to everyone here, everyone that comes in contact with this. He explains that Prabhupada was given this, given the standard of 16 rounds daily of four regulative principles, rising early, going to the morning program, cooperating underneath the GBCs and the temple presidents. And in this, when he said this, he said, if you do this very strictly, then you will go back to Godhead. This I will guarantee. This is a letter that he sent to Ghanasham at the time, who's Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. So Shiva Maharaj explains that this is Prabhupada's guarantee, and because of his weight with Krishna, Krishna is bound to fulfill. He's bound to fulfill what Prabhupada has promised to each and every one of us. And in another excerpt, Prabhupada is explaining the last stanza of the Samsara Dharva prayers. And he's explaining that even if this is a fool, even if this is a rascal, Krishna will accept him because he's recommended by his representative. And therefore he will be delivered. So in the same way, we have that promise. We have a great lineage coming down. And we can see that their activities are centered around actually sharing this mercy as well. So that's the key part of actually unwrapping all this mercy, is also in sharing it. And then we get filled up with more and more ecstatic energy, more and more mercy. At the end of my travels with my spiritual master, there was one day where I think Shantanu Prabhu, Sutta Prabhu, and a few others also brought, like, I think it was like 70 people to Radhadesh, 70 roughly. Yeah. So they had a retreat there. And in the morning, this is the last day that Maharaj was there, and he was flying to South Africa. So in the morning, he told me to just offer all these dry fruits and nuts that one person had donated towards him. It was literally like the day before, this person donated like four massive bags of boga. So he said to me, offer this all to, he's got a small Giriraj Shila, and make it all Mahaprasad. So then it came to his breakfast time, and then he said to me, so did you offer it all? I said, yeah, Maharaj, I offered it all. He goes, what, really, all of it? I said, yeah, I've offered all of it. And he goes, how did you offer it? I said, you know, you take like a little bit from everyone. I put it in the pot, and then I put it in front of Giriraj, and I offered it. And then he just looked at me and he said, oh, you've ruined it all. You know, coming from an Indian background, you're used to putting like a little bit in and then offering that. So then he said, oh, you've ruined it all. I was thinking, oh, it can't be that bad, is it? And then he said, I told you to make it all Mahaprasad. He said, you've made it Prasad, but not Mahaprasad. And then I was just like, I didn't know what to say. So then I just kind of kept quiet. I was in the corner a bit. Few seconds went past. And then he just goes, you know what your problem is? And I was just thinking, oh my gosh, like, I just spent 2 months with you. There's like a whole list of problems that are going to come down. And then he said, and I was also thinking, there's other people in the room, so please don't say too much. And then he said, your problem is you're not thinking how to give the most mercy to others. And then that hit me. Actually, I'm not thinking of the easiest way to give the most mercy to others. I'm actually holding myself back from giving anything to others. And so, anyway, it got resolved, and somehow a bright spark came, and I said, Maharaj, but if you have a little bit, then it'll be Maha Maha Prasad. And then he took a bit and came out. But we see this aspect of giving the mercy, and very much we see that Narada Muni did it. By his life, he was able to change other people's hearts. He was, because of his nature of non-envy, he was able to instill this in others. And we see the same in Srila Prabhupada, that he's changed so many people's lives by giving them this pure bhakti and allowing them to experience a life that is incredible. And so it's now upon everyone's duty to also give that opportunity to others and share the mercy. So Hare Krishna. Thank you for patiently waiting. I know breakfast is here, so everyone's eager to jump up. Yeah, Hare Krishna.